This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo. And for many older adults, having pill organizers, you know, filled with a variety of medications and supplements even would be quite a common sight. But while medicines are meant to help, being on too many of them at one time can be harmful in certain cases. And that is really the opposite outcome of what we want for a lot of our older adults. So on this episode of our Healthy Aging series, we want to discuss the importance of getting to that balancing point, right, between addressing various medical conditions that older adults might have, while also ensuring that they're not, you know, overdosing on their medications as well. And joining me to do just that is Associate Professor Dr. Tan Kit Man, Consultant Geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Center. Hi, Dr. Tan, how are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you, Sue Ann, and thank you very much for the invitation to join you today. I'm very happy to share experiences.
And this is such an important topic, right? Because I think, like I mentioned earlier, we just sort of assume that it's normal for older adults to be on as many medications as you would see. But and that's something that I understand is referred to as polypharmacy. But could you elaborate a bit more on that, Dr. Tan? You know, what is polypharmacy and at what point would you consider that, you know, an older adult is on too many medications?
Oh, well, polypharmacy by itself is defined as being on four or more medications. And you are right, many older adults are on polypharmacy simply because they have many medical conditions that can be treated. And treatment of these medical conditions may actually improve their quality of life, keep them better for longer, and also prolong life expectancy. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to be on appropriate polypharmacy because some of these conditions we shouldn't leave untreated. For example, very severe high blood pressure or very severe diabetes. When do we reach a point to say that it may be excessive polypharmacy? That's when the doctor has to do a review of all the medications the person is on from different various clinics and also a review of their symptom control and to see whether the treatment targets may have been exceeded and the treatment is actually too tight, leading to low blood pressure or low blood sugar, for example. And the doctor may also review whether actually has the condition resolved or gone away. If it was a severe rash or allergic reaction or a gastric ulcer that had fully healed, for example. So there are many things that the doctor can review to see which medications may be stopped safely.
So, you know, you mentioned some of the more common ones like hypertension and diabetes. Are there any other common health conditions that you usually see older adults having when they are on polypharmacy?
Oh, the other common conditions would be high cholesterol or hypercholesterolemia is the medical term, stroke disease, heart disease, chronic lung disease, perhaps thyroid disorders, depression, and osteoarthritis and osteoporosis. Those are just to name a few. Osteoarthritis would be a condition for joints, degeneration of the joints, and osteoporosis would be thinning of the bones. So there are differences in those two conditions. People frequently mix them up. So these are the common conditions that older persons may have requiring appropriate polypharmacy.
So in that case, right, it would be quite common for polypharmacy to actually happen among older adults.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And the key word is appropriate polypharmacy. And also to avoid, we have a term in geriatric medicine called potentially inappropriate medications, or the short form is PIMS, capital letters P-I-M-S. The layperson will not be familiar with this term, and it's not a term that's generally used by other doctors, but it is used in a geriatric medicine field. So there are reference lists that we can refer to see which medications may not be so suitable for the older person. They may be all right for the younger, stronger person, but for a frailer older person, we try to avoid them and switch them to another type of medication.
So could you give some examples of when would it be inappropriate polypharmacy?
Let's say the target of control has been exceeded. I'll give a simple example of high blood pressure treatment. When a person is younger, they were diagnosed at age 50, for example, and they needed to be on three different types of medications to control the blood pressure. But as they grew older, tired a little bit more at home and doing a bit more physical activity, their blood pressure may naturally come down. And the doctor may review their home blood pressure control and decide whether we need to cut down on a few of the medications or reduce the doses. Who knows, by the time the person hits 70, he may only need two of those three original high blood pressure medications and at a lower dose to top it off. Yeah. Now, for people with high blood pressure, they may not record the low blood pressure at home, but they may also suffer a condition called postural hypotension, where their blood pressure drops when they are upright for a prolonged period. I'll give an example of an older person going out for an evening walk. Mm-hmm. They may walk for 30, 40 minutes, and at the beginning of their walk, their blood pressure is normal. But as they walk, the walk gets longer. By the time they hit 30 or 40 minutes, the blood pressure may have dropped to a certain level that they feel weak and may fall or have an unexplained blackout. But frequently these falls or blackouts are blamed to an uneven ground. They blame it on the environment until somebody reviews the situation and does a test called lying and standing blood pressure. That can be done at home or in the clinic, but frequently it doesn't show the drop in the blood pressure, and they may be referred to a specialist clinic called a falls clinic, where tilt table tests may be done to check for those signs of postural hypotension. Yeah. Mm. And another common example will be diabetes. Mm-hmm. And the person may be on several types of diabetes medications, and the older insulins given several times a day. As the person grows frailer and older, eating less, they may be more susceptible to episodes of hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. Even though their HbA1c shows that it's high and poor diabetes control over the last 3 or 4 months. So in this case, the doctor may review the doses of the insulin, perhaps cut back on the doses or change to the newer insulins, the modern insulins that have a lesser risk of hypoglycemia. However, of course, the newer insulins are slightly more expensive. They will also counsel on regular frequent meals with a lower glycemic index food. That means the simple example of wholemeal bread or noodles instead of plain white bread or noodles. Yeah.
Mm. So a lot of these sort of addressing inappropriate polypharmacy would be very individualized, isn't it? It's based on that individual and their needs and their medical needs.
That's right. It'll be based on their medical conditions and also daily symptom control and symptoms of side effects or adverse events. To a certain extent, also, it may depend on their social support, because if a person is beginning to be dependent on someone to administer the medications, we may have to arrange it so that we minimize the number of times the person has to administer the medications, maybe just once a day or twice a day, morning and evening.
Mm. And on that note, right, I was reading up on this. Is there a risk of an older adult, you know, missing out on their medications or even mixing up their medications because they're on too many? And I'm thinking also, especially if they are having some cognitive issues or dementia.
Yeah, certainly that's possible. So we try and simplify the regime as much as possible. If there's a medication which can do the drug with one dose a day instead of two doses a day, we will try our best to prescribe that drug that needs to be taken only once a day. Mm. Some of the older medications, like an ACE inhibitor called captopril, we still very rarely find somebody on it nowadays. It's a 3 times a day or twice a day medication. Now we have a very much newer ones called perindopril or ramipril that are only once a day. So we'll try to change over to that. For someone with cognitive impairment, some family members may feel that it is safer to give them a pill box that says Monday to Sunday so that they won't forget or miss their doses. However, I've come across certain cases where the patient, as the dementia or cognitive impairment gets worse, the family is not aware of it. The patient still lives alone. They have mixed up the days. And at the most severe case I had was a lady who took her medications 6 times in 24 hours.
Oh, gosh.
Because she thought today was Monday. And then because she's always thinking about her medications, she doesn't want to miss it. She thinks, oh, today's Tuesday. Perhaps I haven't taken my medicines. And that's a true event. It did happen. The poor lady or patient had to end up in emergency for a drip and observation for several hours. Luckily, he or she came to no harm. Mm-hmm. And the counseling later was to have supervised medication administration and not a Monday to Sunday pill box. The alternative to that would be a daily pill box. Just give that day's dose, not the Monday to Sunday big box. Yeah. So those are very relevant real life problems that people are encountering.
A lot of things for family members to think about as well, right? I think a lot of us think that, oh, the weekly pill boxes, you know, would solve a lot of problems. But that in itself, like you mentioned, Dr. Tan, could lead to more problems if you don't realize, you know, if you don't recognize if it suits the needs of the older person. Earlier, you mentioned that, you know, when it comes to certain drugs, right, certain medications, it may be suitable for a younger person, but the same dose may not be suitable for a more frail older person. Why are older persons at higher risk of, adverse drug reactions? You know, what's happening in their body as they age, which puts them at higher risk?
Okay, an older person, they are more likely to have kidney impairment as they age. Mm-hmm. Not severe kidney impairment. Some people are rather unlucky. They have severe kidney impairment due to poorly controlled high blood pressure or diabetes. Mm-hmm. But as we age, there will be a certain mild degree of kidney impairment as we age. So some drugs are metabolized by the kidney. And if the kidney does not work so well, then the drug or medication will not be cleared as fast from our body. So we will have a higher level of the drug remaining in the body of the older person for longer, leading to a higher treatment efficacy. So the same dose of blood pressure pill at age 50 may have a bigger effect at age 70 if their kidneys are not as good at that time. And also, there may be liver impairment. So some drugs are also processed by the liver. With the same principle that it accumulates if there was a liver impairment. Then the older person may have lower body weight, muscle mass, and higher fat in their body, the percentage of it compared to a younger person. And for some drugs, the tissue distribution in the body tissue also makes a difference if there's more fat or less fat, or more muscle or less muscle. Then as a person ages, the other enzymes or metabolisms in their body also changes. So they may process the drug slower than a younger person. And older person also are more likely to be on polypharmacy, as you mentioned, as we are discussing. So there could be drug-drug interactions as well. That means one drug could make another drug less effective or more effective. And there could be drug-disease interactions as well. I give a very simple example of someone who's a diabetic. If they needed short-term steroids for whatever reason, in COVID, if the person had severe COVID, they may need a short course of steroids for 5 to 10 days. It will drive their sugars up high. So that's a drug-disease interaction, the drug being the steroids and the disease being diabetes. Another example we see in geriatric clinic would be somebody with dementia and also having a bit of asthma or COPD, which is a lung disease where they wheeze. Mm-hmm. And if we start one of the dementia medications, the name is either donepezil or rivastigmine patch, Exelon patch, the person with the lung disease, they may actually wheeze more. And somebody not familiar with the properties of that dementia drug may not be aware that, hey, this patient's wheeze is worsened because of that drug. And they may end up prescribing more inhalers. So there are really many, many reasons why an older person may have more adverse events from polypharmacy and the medications.
On the show with me today is Associate Professor Dr. Tan Kit Man, Consultant Geriatrician from University Malaya Medical Centre, and we are discussing polypharmacy among older adults, and in particular, when and why deep prescribing can help improve the quality of life for older adults. We'll be right back after a few messages on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, Lim Soo Ann. You are tuned into our Healthy Aging series, and on the show with me today is Associate Professor Dr. Tan Kit Man, Consultant Geriatrician at University Malaya Medical Center. Now we are discussing what is what appropriate and safe de-prescribing looks like for older adults, especially when, you know, many of them are on more medications than they should be, which can harm rather than help. Now, Dr. Tan, you know, for many adults, right, when I think about my grandmother, for example, you know, they would see several different specialists, especially if they have different health conditions. From the physician's perspective, from a geriatrician's perspective, you know, is polypharmacy usually taken into account when an older adult patient sees these different doctors? Or, you know, is it not, and that's what leads to a variety of medications that a patient needs to take?
So in an ideal situation, every doctor who prescribes a new medication would check with the patient what other medications they are on.
Mm-hmm.
And they will then check for duplication. Perhaps, hey, actually, the person's already on this drug in another form,
mm-hmm.
and I don't need to prescribe this, or I just need to adjust that dose. Or if I prescribe my new medication for the patient, I need to check for drug interactions. There are various factors that stops this from happening, time being one of them. There's time constraints in the clinic. Many people will find that if you have 20 patients waiting outside, it's really hard to spend longer than the allocated time.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the health literacy of our general public, who may or may not be aware that I really should show all my other medicines from other clinics to this doctor in case it interacts. But we do have patients and family who are very good, who will say, oh, but doctor, will it react with any of my other medicines or the food I'm taking? In a complex older person, perhaps it's best that there is a coordinating physician, such as a geriatrician or a general practitioner, who is willing to take on the patient and all the complexities and be the person to monitor. The patient also ideally should carry with them a list of the generic names and doses. Generic names means the chemical names of the medications and doses and frequency of what they take. The best is actually, I usually advise my patients, kindly bring a strip of each of your medications to clinic the next time for us to review. But they may say, doctor, you do have a list, don't you, on the computer? We will say, yes, we do have a list, but we do want to check for your safety that actually it's taken as prescribed. Because sometimes we find surprising things. We've prescribed it one way, but it's actually not taken correctly. And then, you know, the effect of the medicines will be less. Yeah.
So what are some signs or red flags for older adults or even their family members that, you know, the medications that they're on may be unsuitable for them? And you mentioned earlier that certain things like fainting or blackouts when walking, they often attribute it to the environment, right? For example, but are there any other signs that people should look out for?
If the person is feeling lethargic or confused or dizzy and cannot find any new medical illness, such as a fever or infection or heart attack or stroke, you know, usually if an older person has a new symptom, it is best to bring them to a doctor for a review, together with all their medical history and medications, of course, rather than wait and see attitude. Mm-hmm. Because waiting and seeing, something terrible could happen in the next 1 or 2 days if the person isn't checked out. So the red flags, we mentioned the dizziness, blackouts, feeling weak. There could be other non-specific signs like confusion, more so than usual if they have dementia. And delirium is the medical term for confusion. Mm-hmm. So if there's any change in their steady state, their behavior or their daily activities have changed, poorer appetite, different habits such as diarrhea or constipation or nausea. So any change in an older person, take note and ask, oh, father, how are you doing? I notice you're not eating so much these few days. Are you feeling unwell? You know, tell us, or we can also bring you for medical attention. So it's important to ask the older person because they feel that they don't want to burden their children. Mm-hmm. They may also have depression and feel that they really, really don't want to burden their children or keep quiet about it, or fear of going to see a doctor, in fact. Many, many factors. So we pay attention to our older folk. And actually, my own father told me that some people may not need so many medicines if their family members paid more attention to them. But but that's a layperson's insight. So, you know, social interaction is a very important part of any treatment plan. Yeah.
Is it common for family members or even the older adult themselves to attribute these symptoms that you mentioned to aging? Because some of them seem like, you know, it's very common. People would think that it's very common for an older adult to have things like change in appetite or dizziness and things like that, right?
Well, dizziness is not a normal occurrence. So if there is dizziness, do get it checked out. There's many, many causes of dizziness, including ear problems and blood circulation problems to the brain, as well as polypharmacy. So get it checked out. Reduced appetite, it should be gradual over many, many years. It's not a sudden thing over several weeks or several days. And if that happens, then something else may be going on. Perhaps a urine infection or a lung infection or a small COVID infection that nobody noticed any extra symptoms apart from tiredness and lethargy. So if it's a gradual thing over many years, that can happen. But if it's over a few days or weeks or even 1 or 2 months, they need a checkup. Mm. It could even be a mood problem. It could be depression or anxiety. Yeah.
Mm. So from a geriatrician's perspective, Dr. Tan, when would you consider de-prescribing patients? And I guess what would be the aim of doing so, right, with your patients?
Okay, there are many circumstances where we will look for de-prescribing. And for example, we've already given the examples of where the control of the disease is too tight with low blood sugar and low blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And where the condition has resolved, like a gastric ulcer that has fully healed or a rash or an itch that has gone away. Then, very important, when a person is severely frail and bedbound, where they may be approaching end-of-life care, some of the medicines they are on may be for a long-term investment for the future, such as for osteoporosis, where we prevent fractures with a fall, and also cholesterol medications to prevent stroke and heart attack in future. When a person is at the very severely frail stage at end of life, I'm sorry to say they may not live long enough to see the future benefits of these medications. So it's really a case-by-case basis what medications to deprescribe in an older person who are severely frail. We are, of course, afraid to withdraw things like blood pressure medicine completely or diabetes medicine in case their blood pressure and sugar shoots sky high and they'll suffer consequences then. So needs a doctor to review. Mm-hmm. The other times where we deprescribe, when the patient comes to us and say that, oh, doctor, I have too many pills. It's called pill burden. It's too high. I'm really tired of taking so many pills. It's like I'm taking pills for breakfast instead of my breakfast. So we will also go through the patient and prioritize which conditions are life-threatening if we withdraw the medications. So probably we shouldn't touch those, or at best we can reduce a little bit. But which conditions we are more likely to be able to reduce without causing much harm. So it's shared decision-making and prioritization. Mm. Then we would deprescribe also when the person may have a swallow problem. Who are people who may have a swallow muscle problem? Those who had a stroke or have advanced Parkinson's for many years, their swallow muscles also become slow and weak. Then we may change some of those medications to other forms. Either the tablet can be crushed and mixed up with some food, or if they're on a feeding tube, it can be put down a tube, or else can it be changed to injection form. The weekly medication called alendronate for osteoporosis, it cannot be crushed. It shouldn't be. It'll be dangerous. It'll cause a gastric ulcer erosion. So we may suggest to the family, maybe we can change it to a 6-monthly injection called denosumab, which will treat the osteoporosis just as well. So there are other means of treating, like a skin patch or an injection, for example, sometimes even a pill under the tongue. There are many other reasons, if you bear with me, to deprescribe, like if the person has severe side effects from the medicines, or the medicine is found to be not effective, then we change to another type. Also in advanced dementia, somebody who with advanced dementia may really refuse to swallow medications. So we have to reduce the stress level for the carer and the patient. Some of the medications, as I say, is for long-term investment. Perhaps it's not so necessary in advanced dementia.
Mm.
Yeah. And one last one. Sometimes we may even find medications prescribed to treat a side effect of another medication. A very simple example is a blood pressure pill called amlodipine. Mm. It may cause leg swelling. Then the person may end up on a pill called furosemide to reduce the leg swelling. It's a diuretic that makes the person pass more urine to get rid of the swelling. Whereas it's better to perhaps review the amlodipine, the original drug that caused the leg swelling, that we change it to another medication. Actually, yet another reason to deprescribe is if the patient comes and say, "Doctor, my cost of treatment is too high."
Finances and is another issue.
Yeah. So we again will do a good review to see whether we can change for something else or actually just stop the medicines altogether. I'm sure I missed quite a few reasons, but we may come to it later as you ask me more questions. Yeah. Mm.
And what I'm getting a lot from all of this is that, you know, Dr. Tan, the importance of it is speaking to your doctor about it, right? And you were touching a bit on the dangers of, you know, potentially changing the medicines on your own to crush the medication, for example, and how that could become dangerous. So really, if anything is on a patient's mind or on their family member's mind, the first port of call should be their doctor rather than, you know, making any decisions on their own, right?
Yeah, that would be advisable in case the decision the family member makes is wrong and it may cause the person harm, then there'll be big regrets after that. Actually, the definition of deprescribing, it means stopping or reducing the dose of a medication for a good reason. For example, it's not effective anymore or the treatment target is too tight, under the supervision of a healthcare professional. Mm. So the criteria is that it's reducing or stopping a medication under the supervision of a healthcare professional. So that's the term deprescribing. It shouldn't be undertaken by the layperson on their own in case something bad happens due to it.
So I'm assuming that most patients are usually take it quite optimistic, quite positively when, you know, you help them to deprescribe.
Oh, yes, that's right. Many are quite happy. They'll say, "Oh, yeah, I really hate taking so many pills." That's the majority, I suppose, maybe slightly more than 60 or 70%. And especially if it saves them money and saves them time and less trouble for their children to purchase multiple medications. The flip side is that some patients may feel insecure because they have been on this type of medicines for, say, 20, 30 years. And the original specialist who prescribed it, they really liked the doctor and really trust him, said that, you have to be on this long term. It'll help keep you well for longer and perhaps increase life expectancy. However, the doctor at that time would not know how fit or frail the person is in 20 or 30 years' time. It just depends on how good the communication skills are of the present doctor to try and explain why it is now necessary to make a change or to decrease your medications. So, there are people who are very accepting and there are people who may be a bit reluctant. They're also reluctant that, what if I stop this and something bad happens? What if my blood pressure goes sky high and I get a stroke? But how we reassure them is that actually, if we ask you to stop or reduce your dose, we will require that you please check your blood pressure a few times a week. If you find that it goes above a certain level, then start back your medicines, maybe at the half the original dose or the original dose, or go to your local doctor or come back to us. When we deprescribe, we have to give a plan what to do if the symptoms come back or if it doesn't go well.
So how long would usually, you know, for example, an example, right? How long on average would that process of deprescribing take? Because it's not just, it's not necessarily always just you immediately stop this medication, right?
Okay. it may take a process of several weeks to several months to gradually wean down a person's blood pressure medications and blood sugar medications, for example. If it was a dangerous situation when we see them in clinic, like their resting blood pressure is already 90 over 50, that's pretty low, or even 80 something or 70 over 40, first we have to check whether they're acutely ill. Have they got an infection right now making them sick and low blood pressure? But if not, and we see that it's due to four blood pressure medications, we will stop it more rapidly. We may even say withhold most of them for a day. When it starts rising, reintroduce this one first, then reintroduce the other one. It takes a lot of commitment and work from the family members. And there is, I'm afraid, we need to have a certain degree of health literacy from the family members and patient, that they are ready to learn the names of the medicines, what they are for, the dosage, and how to monitor, how frequently to do the blood pressure or blood sugar monitoring. There are some drugs from the psychiatry services that we must not withdraw abruptly. We've seen disasters happen where antidepressants or benzodiazepines, the sleeping pills, are, how you say, withdrawn cold turkey. The person can rebound into a very severe depression or anxiety stage. So reduction of those medicines are usually over months, even a year or a year and a half or two. However, if it's a dangerous situation where there is already a clear overdose, not intentional overdose, but a prescription of too high a dose and they're very groggy or drowsy, of course, we reduce it faster then. But in steady state, psychiatry medicines are withdrawn over a much longer period to prevent sudden reappearance of those symptoms. Yeah.
Mm. The importance of knowing why you're taking that medication, right? I think a lot of us, you know, I'm saying this myself included, sometimes we take the medicines that doctors prescribe to us and we don't really know what it's for. We just, you know, follow the instructions, but that shouldn't be the case. You know, the pandemic has led to postponements of appointments and of course longer wait times in between appointments for a lot of people, right? Does that pose a challenge for de-prescribing and monitoring patients, especially when your follow-ups are sort of very far apart?
Yeah, that's true. The COVID pandemic really has upset a lot of things for many people, and healthcare is definitely one of them. Ideally, when we start a deprescribing process, we will give a time frame for when we see them back to monitor response, for good response as well as bad response. Somebody's appointment from a 3-month gap or 4-month gap may have been postponed to as long as a year's gap. In the hospital, in the earlier stages, we all remember that many of the services were diverted to emergency COVID treatment. So it's good for every person to have a local doctor in their community where they trust and have good rapport with, they can get along with, who can take the time to titrate their blood pressure or diabetes medicines, for example. Because general practitioners do have a high burden of patients who have these non-communicable diseases. So they know how to treat it very, very well. Mm-hmm. You don't actually necessarily need to go to a specialist in the hospital for the less complex patients. So yeah, the COVID pandemic has affected the deprescribing process for some. Yeah.
Mm. And seeing your GP cuts down your waiting times, your costs, because they're so much more accessible as well.
That's right. That's right. And it would be helpful if, let's say, the deprescribing process was started in a hospital clinic, that we could write a quick memo to the person's general practitioner to say that, dear doctor, this person's blood pressure appears to be too tightly controlled. The home readings are, as such, perhaps 100 over 50. We would like to cut down the medicines in these steps, starting with this medication. We would greatly appreciate if you will review in 2 weeks' time and further adjust to a target of such a blood pressure, maybe 150 or 140 over 70, for example. So if there's a communication there, you know, the patient may feel reassured that My specialist is giving my general practitioner some guidance how to help me, rather than I come back. It's not possible to go back to a clinic every 2 weeks, actually, for a review. Mm-hmm. There's no space in the government clinics to have someone back every 2 weeks. Yeah.
Now, we've touched on COVID. You know, you've touched on COVID here and there. And let's talk about that a bit more, right? Now we have the added concerns of a potential COVID infection, as well as more and more people dealing with long COVID issues. How does that, how do both of that impact de-prescribing, if at all, if, you know, an older adult, for example, is also being treated for either COVID or long COVID health issues?
In the older person, if they really had a very severe COVID illness, they may have lost a lot of weight with the hospital stay or the home quarantine at home. Mm-hmm. They may also, if they had severe illness, suffered some kidney damage during the COVID illness. So that's the simple examples. They are lighter in body weight. Their kidneys are not as good as before. They may still be confused after their hospital stay with COVID, that's called delirium, hence eating and drinking less. So really, there needs to be a major review of their pre-COVID medication list to see what is still appropriate at this point. And, you know, they will also then need a review in future, because it's hoped that the person will get better from COVID over several weeks or months, that the sequelae of it, then some of these medications may need to be reintroduced. So the very important point would be at the point of discharge from hospital, a fresh medication list, and say to the family members, don't take back the old medications. It could harm father or mother. Here's the new list. How about in 2 weeks' time, call into your GP, check the blood pressure at home several times a week, encourage oral intake, check the sugars if they're diabetic, bring it to the GP for him or her to titrate the medicines, and that goes on. But very importantly, there should be the rehabilitation process as well, with enough physical activity that the patient can tolerate, and watching their nutrition. The older person, if they're confused or delirious, they won't be asking for food. They'll just be sitting quietly or laying quietly in bed, and they can easily get malnourished. They may even need hand feeding or encouragement for a while, and say that please eat a few spoons more, and it's small and frequent meals. So people need rehabilitation after a severe COVID illness. On the other side, you of course hear about very strong older persons who hardly had a runny nose or sore throat, and that's it, and they're really proud, and I'm really glad for them. Important thing is to get the vaccines taken. Not only COVID vaccines, there's the usual influenza and pneumococcus vaccines as well.
Yeah. Mm. You know, with an aging population, you know, and we are increasingly worried about the health conditions that our population will have as we continue to age. Would you have a final message for our listeners about polypharmacy and de-prescribing?
Polypharmacy, when it's appropriate polypharmacy, it should be done, because it actually improves quality of life and may prolong life expectancy and just makes life more comfortable for everyone. So don't equate the term polypharmacy to something bad. Mm-hmm. You know, is polypharmacy always dangerous? The answer is no, if it's appropriate polypharmacy. The thing is to have a regular medication review with your own doctor every 6 months at least. Bring all the medicines to your doctor and say, doctor, would you mind if we go through all my medicines again? Because I just want to check whether I should still stay on them or should we take away some of them. The conversation for de-prescribing can be started by anyone, which is the patient or the carer, or the doctor, or the pharmacist, or even the nurse who's administering the medications, or the therapist who's looking after the patient, that when they do some physical activity during physiotherapy, finds that, hey, the blood pressure is a little bit low and the person's tired, cannot do too much. So in summary, do not be afraid of appropriate polypharmacy. Go to your doctor regularly for a medication review, and the doctor may find something called potentially inappropriate medication, the PIMS that we spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I also forgot to mention that there are websites or apps that can check for drug-drug interactions that a doctor can refer to, and sometimes the pharmacist and also a layperson if they choose to. One of the websites is called Medscape, and it's for free. and we key in the 7 or 8 or 10 medicines the patient is on, then it will come up with a combination or list of what may be potentially dangerous. So then that's added information for the doctor, pharmacist and patients. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Tan.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much for inviting me. Very happy to do so.
I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Tan Kitman, Consultant Geriatrician at University Malaya Medical Centre, and we've been discussing polypharmacy and in particular inappropriate polypharmacy and, you know, how can patients sort of talk about that with their family members and with their physicians. And really, the idea here is to help older adults live a better quality of life. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.